Welcome, welcome, and thanks for joining me. Will you start by introducing yourself, please?
Yes, I'm Dr. Boni Rietveld. I'm an orthopedic surgeon and also trained as a professional musician with the trumpet as my first instrument. And back in the early days when I was doing my residency in orthopedics, I was really puzzled by how can I combine my three big passions. One is music, the other one is the musculoskeletal apparatus, and the last one is sports. And then a colleague of mine said, I know an orthopedic surgeon in New York City who's taking care of dancers, and dance is really related to music, and it has some sport aspects in it, and it is definitely musculoskeletal, because this doctor, with Bill Hamilton, is an orthopedic surgeon. So I went over to New York City back in 1982, and that's what really set me off in performing arts medicine. When I came back in the Netherlands, I was appointed the orthopedic surgeon of the Netherlands Dance Theater, and I started the Medical Center for Dancers and Musicians, because when I took care of dancers, the orchestra also came to consult me. And ever since, I've been dealing exclusively with performing artists, dancers and musicians. I've never seen any other patients apart from dancers and musicians since I set off this Medical Center for Dancers and Musicians. And I've been very active in the field of performing arts medicine associations. I founded the Dutch Performing Arts Medicine Association. I was a board member of the Performing Arts Medicine Association. And I'm a past president of IADMS from 2007 till 2009, after having been a board member from the first charter meeting on back in 1992. So it's IADMS is really, really very, very close to my heart. And I have a big archive, which I showed you just before, where it's I may be able to show that. It gives you an impression. Well, that is a short introduction. I'm retired now. I just turned 70 last summer, and I'm now active as a medical coach for injured dancers and musicians to guide them through the difficult aspects of rehabilitation, of making decisions if an operation is a good idea or not. What type of treatment is the best for my injury? Do they have the right diagnosis? What does it mean for my career as a dancer? So it's really taking advantage of my over 25 years of dealing exclusively with professional and amateur dancers of all different types of dance, modern dance, classical ballet, tap dance, but also street dance and ballroom dance. So it's really very diverse, and I've seen over 10,000 dancers in my years in this Medical Center for Dancers and Musicians.
Wow, thank you. Before we dive, you know, all the way back to the beginning and talk about, you know, all sorts of things, for our listeners who can't see what you showed me a whole wall of binders and books that have archived the last several decades of your career. And there is one small slot missing, which is the whole binder for the early 90s, yeah? Or the beginning of the 90s.
Yeah, I'll have to, it's right here. This is all IADMS.
That's incredible. It looks like about 100 pages in a binder. Amazing.
Absolutely.
Amazing. So let's go back to the early 80s, pardon me, where you were in medicine and you were interested in combining music, musculoskeletal care, and sports. And let's start from there.
Yeah. So I went to, in 1982, I went to New York City to work with Bill Hamilton. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know him at the time. And there's one anecdote which is interesting to tell you. I didn't really know anything about ballet or dance at all. And at that time, Mr. Balanchine, George Balanchine, was still alive. He was called Mr. B in his company. And he was actually in the hospital I was attending as a resident at the time with Bill Hamilton. And one early Sunday morning, we came to make ward rounds, and we came into Mr. B's hospital room. There was an interesting looking man. And so I introduced myself to him. I said, hello, I'm Boni. And he said, hello, I'm Rudy. And then the conversation continued, and we drank a glass of very, very good sweet white wine, a Chateau de Crème. And the conversation continued with Mr. B, with this Rudy, and with Bill Hamilton and me in that hospital room. And then after that, after having seen this frail, famous Mr. Balanchine in his hospital bed, we went to the New York City Ballet Company in Lincoln Center, and we saw his swan solo. I'm not sure if it's the Black Swan. Anyway, it's from Swan Lake, a solo by George Balanchine. And I was so moved by the fact that this frail man in his hospital bed had made this beautiful choreography. Mm-hmm. And ever since, I've been in love with ballet. But on the way going to Lincoln Center, Bill Hamilton asked me, did you know this Rudy? I said, no, I have no idea. Do you know who it is? He said, I said, no idea. He said, it's Rudolf Nureyev. And my reaction was, Rudy who? Because I'd never heard of Nureyev at that time. So that kind of describes how I entered as a blank page the world of dance, ballet, and dance medicine. But it really took my instant love, and I fell in love with performing arts medicine, and in particular with dance medicine.
I will highlight two things here, since I've been doing these interviews for some time. You're the second story that has told me about having a drink with Dr. B. Not Dr. B, Mr. B. Mr. B. No, Mr. B, because Marika Molnar was talking about having a drink with Mr. B backstage, which was very interesting.
What did she drink with him? What wine did she was she offered?
Now you're testing my memory. It was I don't remember. We'll have to go back and listen.
Yeah. Well, in my case, it was a Chateau d'Yquem.
Yes.
the funny second anecdote, because George Balanchine was called Mr. B, in my clinic, I always had myself being called Dr. B as an homage to George Balanchine. So many patients still call me, hey, Dr. B, good to see you. And they don't realize what the background of this abbreviation is. But of course, it's homage to George Balanchine.
Sure. So when you came, how long were you in New York with Dr. Hamilton?
It was only 3 months, but they were so influential for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. It was, I spent the first, I had 1 year off the term of probation type year between my general surgery and my orthopedic surgery. And the first half I spent with another role model for me in orthopedics. It is my father, who was an orthopedic surgeon and who really inspired me to become an orthopedic surgeon. And my second role model in orthopedics is Bill Hamilton. So those two people were actually just the year I was not officially trained as an orthopedic surgeon was the year which influenced most my career and my entire professional life.
Mm. And did your dad have a specialty in orthopedic surgery?
We didn't have specialties yet at that time.
Okay.
In the north of Holland, there in the province of North Holland, there are about 40 orthopedic surgeons. At that time, mm-hmm. there were two. And so it was my father and one of his colleagues, and they were taking care of everything imaginable in orthopedics. So they were really all-round orthopedic surgeons, and I was trained as an all-round orthopedic surgeon, mm-hmm. and I never subspecialized in shoulder, hand, foot and ankle, knee, hip, spine. I did it actually all, but of course, dealing with dancers, foot and ankle is my main subject in dancers. And actually ankle, I checked and researched what different injuries I saw in my patients. And it was 27% ankle problems. It was 25% knee problems and 13% foot problems. Hmm. So it's mainly lower extremity. About 78% is lower extremity injuries. But I've also seen back injuries and hand and shoulder, of course, too. But it also depends on your definition of injury. And I'm sure that in the first line, like physiotherapists, like in your case, you see many more back problems than I would see in my clinic as an orthopedic surgeon. So that's always something you have to bear in mind. What type of definition is behind these percentages? And in my case, those are percentages of people referred to an orthopedic surgeon specialized in dance medicine.
Sure. So when you came back to the Netherlands, and you decided to specialize in dance and music, yeah? Did you, I'm curious, since you didn't have a background in dance beforehand, what did you do to further educate yourself in dance?
Nothing. There was nothing around.
Yeah,
I was the first person in the Netherlands being interested and active in dance medicine. Mm-hmm. And there used to be an orthopedic surgeon from Denmark. Maybe you've come across his name, Eivind Thomassen. Mm-hmm. And Thomassen mm-hmm. and Bill Hamilton, they really knew each other. And you had in London, Justin House. And actually, my period with Bill Hamilton was extremely intense. He told me, I don't have a place for you to stay. So I paid for a room in a nurse's residence in St. Luke's Roosevelt Hospital Center. But he said, I can take you out for dinner every evening and I'll take care of your food. So we dined every evening in a different restaurant. And at that time, he was dating Linda Hamilton, Linda Homeck, as her family name is. So he went to all the rehearsals to see his sweet love in Lincoln Center. And I was following him as his shadow. And during this ballet sessions, teaching sessions, lessons in the early morning, warming up things, Bill would explain me every movement, every gesture. So it was really a teaching 24 hours per day in the quality of life, food, but especially in the terminology and the knowledge about dance and he also went to many, many performances. He always had was freely to go into Lincoln Center. And as I said, I followed him as his shadow. So we went to all these performances, went backstage. I met all the dancers at that time. And so I think we went to performances 5 times a week.
Wow.
So it was an extremely intense course of dance medicine, mm-hmm. Which was the foundation for my later career as a doctor for dancers. And I didn't know anything about musicians' medicine, but being a professionally trained musician myself with the trumpet and the harp as my instruments, mm-hmm. I knew about all the instruments and I have a biomechanical interest. So I just started analyzing musicians coming in with injuries using my general all-round orthopedic surgical knowledge and my musical knowledge from the conservatory. So I actually am one of the founders of musicians' medicine, definitely in the Netherlands, and also I'm not the only one, but there are so many more, but also in the international field of musicians' medicine.
Amazing. So tell me about like being in the Netherlands and going into this, the care of performing artists, and how you established yourself in that space.
Well, it was also due to Bill Hamilton, mm-hmm. the Nederlands Dans Theater. I'm sure you've heard of the company, mm-hmm. with Jiri Kilian, and its financial director was Karel Birny. And they were on tour in New York City, and they had several injured dancers. So they went to see the famous orthopedic surgeon for dancers, Bill Hamilton. And they came into Bill's office just after I had left New York. And Bill said, why are you coming to me? There's an orthopedic surgeon in the Netherlands who knows everything I know, because he was following me as his shadow. As my shadow in this case. Confusing. Uh-huh. And so why don't you go and see him? And at that time, I had taken over my father's orthopedic practice in Haarlem. And so one day there came the physiotherapist of the Nederlands Dans Theater with a few injured dancers. And I was able to take good care of them, operated one of them, Catherine Allard, who is now the artistic director of the ballet in Barcelona. And it was quite successful. And I remember that the first performance that Catherine Allard was performing again on stage, she invited me to come. And I was extremely nervous because I thought, this was the first time she was going to try out if she was able to dance on her operated ankle. And at that time, I didn't realize that she had been training and rehearsing many times. And so she did very well, obviously. And after that, the Nederlands Dans Theater invited me to become their orthopedic surgeon and do a weekly clinic in The Hague. The Hague is about 45 kilometers away from Haarlem. And so I started on a Thursday morning to do a dancers clinic in the Nederlands Dans Theater premises in The Hague. And then the orchestra of The Hague heard about this orthopedic surgeon taking care of dancers, being a musician himself. So they started also to come into my clinic, my hours in the office of the Nederlands Dans Theater. And this expanded and expanded. And at that time, it was getting too busy, and there were too many strange people from outside coming into the Nederlands Dance Theater, that I decided it was better to start a clinic in a The Hague hospital. So I left my clinic in Haarlem, left general orthopedic surgery, and entered the West End Hospital in The Hague, and founded there the Medical Center for Dancers and Musicians on April 1st, 1993. Just after visiting the charter meeting of the International Association for Dance Medicine and Science, which I think was in Baltimore, but I'm not really sure about that, where it was. That maybe that's in this paper I found. The first annual meeting was scheduled to be held at Baltimore Washington Airport Marriott Inn, June 21st till 23rd, 1991. So that was my first IADAMS meeting. And that's why I became a charter member of IADAMS. And actually, I've entered the board of IADAMS in those early 90s as well.
What do you remember about that first meeting in 91?
Well, it was a very comforting feeling to realize that I was not out there all by myself, that there were other people sharing the passion of performing arts medicine, and especially of dance medicine, and exchanging ideas and getting to know each other, which would lead to lifelong friendships. For instance, with Justin House, who I visited in a very delicate period in his life after he temporarily had divorced his wife. And I remember that I stayed with Justin House in London, somewhere in the 90s of the past century, And he asked me, what do you want for breakfast? And this was this one-man household, and I didn't want to make it too difficult for him. So I asked him, just make for me whatever you take yourself. And then he disappeared for about 1 hour in the kitchen. And prepared me a full British breakfast, which was delicious, of course. Yeah. And I remember that he had a very good brand of tea. It was fresh made tea. And I asked him, what is this special blend of tea you're offering me? And he said, oh, I'm happy that you asked that. It's my favorite. It's a combination. And I hope that people who listen to this interview will try it out. It's loose leaf tea, and it's one spoon of Assam, one spoon of Lapsang Souchong, and one spoon of Earl Grey. And give it at least 5 minutes to fuse, and then you have the delicious blend of Justin House. And I always think of Justin when I make this tea, and I make it very regularly. This afternoon, we were drinking the Justin House blend of this awesome Earl Grey and Lapsang Souchong.
Do you know what has struck me doing these interviews is, you know, Dr. Weiss speaks about this too, because he also went to London and spent time there.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
And the extreme hospitality of both Dr. Hamilton and Dr. House is really striking to me. And does that kind of thing exist now, where MDs are going to visit others across the ocean or countries?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. There's one colleague I would like to mention, that's Mandy Zhang. She's from Singapore. Mm-hmm. And she came to visit me and work with me and learn from me. And I told her about Dr. Hamilton being a role model for me. And she said, but you know, Dr. B, you're a role model model for me as well. So you're passing on this legacy of the giants. We're standing on the shoulders of giants. And she said, well, for me, you're a giant and I'm standing on your shoulders. So that definitely happens. And I know that many medical students who were trained by me in their medical studies, they either were interested in dance medicine from the field of sports medicine perspective or from orthopedic surgery. And the same applies to young physiotherapy students who spent some time with me. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure I've been inspiring many colleagues around the world in physiotherapy, in medicine, in orthopedics, in sports medicine. And so it's interesting to see how the generations follow each other. and we all feel like being one big family. And I've known David Weiss for it's over 30 years now. So we all know each other. Marika Molnar, she was already active as a physio for the New York City Ballet at the time I stayed with Bill Hamilton back in 82. Mm-hmm. So I've known her for over 40 years now, which is intriguing that we all feel so very much so close to each other. And I think that's to do with what I said just before. It's a great feeling of not being alone out there.
Sure.
But if you imagine that IADAMS now has over 1,000 members, and at that time we were just starting with maybe 24, 22 all over the world.
Yeah, no, it's really impressive. Really impressive.
Yeah.
91, should we talk a little more about IADAMS, or should we talk a little bit more about your clinic in The Hague starting in 93?
Let's talk about IADAMS first. Okay. I think that's most interesting for our listeners.
Sure.
I remember that I was not aware of anything like Dance Medicine International at that time. So I had not heard about the first meeting, which was, I'm going to scan this paper and send it to you. Mm. And it tells about the meeting they had in 1990 in Spain.
Yeah.
Have you heard about this meeting?
I have, yeah. But yeah. Tell us.
It was... It was sponsored by the Spanish Association for Dance Medicine and its president, Dr. Juan Bosco Calvo. Mm-hmm. And if there's any person you should include in this oral history project, it's Juan Bosco Calvo. He's in Spain. And so that was in 1990. And then the first annual meeting of IADAMS in Baltimore, Washington Airport, Marriott Inn, that's the meeting where I went to. And I have a list of the charter members of this first meeting. So I'll also scan that and send it to you. And there's some names in it of people who are still around. And IADAMS then had, that was interesting. Maybe it's been told already. But at this first charter meeting, we elected the president. Has this been told already?
You know what? I don't actually think we have this particular story. So dive right in.
Okay. Well, there was, I'm not sure what the word in English is. Is it called a draw or a tie when the people end exactly with the same number mm-hmm. of votes? Mm-hmm. What is the word? Is it draw? A draw?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. A draw. Oh, they tied or yeah.
Okay. Tied. Well, it's both words.
Yeah.
And then they decided to become co-presidents. So Justin House and Ellen Ryan, who were the two to be elected presidents, they both became presidents, which was actually a great set off being European-based and United States-based. But at that time, we made a mistake, in my perspective, that is, that meeting should be alternately held in the United States and the rest of the world, which is, in my perspective, not a truly international approach. We were not able to break this chain of going back and forth every alternating year to the United States until 2009. And in 2009, we had the meeting in The Hague, which I organized with the Dutch Performing Arts Medicine Association. And it was interesting. We had an election for the venue for the meeting of 2009, which took place in Canberra in 2007. I had this meeting in Canberra, and then Matthew Wyan and I were both running for our cities, met for Birmingham, and I was running for The Hague. Mm-hmm. And in 2009, mm-hmm. we had the Holland Dance Festival coinciding with the Jubilee of the Nederlands Dance Theater. So it was really very, from a dance perspective, it was a very interesting time to organize a conference with as venue. We had the Royal Theatre of The Hague for the conference, and we were going to performances every evening with the whole group of IADAMS attendees. And then fortunately, The Hague was chosen, but then Birmingham, who had also a very good bid, was chosen to organize its meeting in 2010. And I said, yes, yay. Now we break the circle of alternating United States, Europe. And so if there's one thing I would like to change in IADAMS, that is the idea that we should go every alternating year to the United States. But there is maybe a second reason to that, that's that the large majority of members comes from the United States. So from a financial perspective, it's understandable that we go alternating years to the United States.
Sure.
But I think there's so much to win if we can include more people from France and more people, although it's not the right time to say this, from Russia and the Eastern European world.
Mm.
And of course, we all feel terribly sorry for what's happening in Ukraine. And it's not the right time to include the Russians, but they've been missing out of IEMs, and there's so much knowledge over there. So I hope we can be able, if this terrible war is over, to make contact again with the Downs medicine specialists in Russia.
Mm.
So that's one of my desires, to get rid of the alternating years and to get more Russian and French and other parts of the world people included in IELTS.
Excellent. Heard. So bouncing back to The Hague then, Hague in 93, not The Hague in 2009 or 2000. So when you set up your clinic specifically for performing arts, what did it look like in its infancy?
In the beginning, there was nothing. Mm. It was just a hospital room. And I decided to install a bar, a double bar for the small dance students and the higher, you know, the two, yeah, I'm sure you've seen it, a bar. So I had a bar in one room, and in the second room, I had a white piano. It was selected for its color, not for its sound, although it had a great sound, but it was a white piano, so it would not be too apparent in the hospital room. And then I had one patient, and then it slowly expanded, and I was doing it one day a week.
Mm.
And then I decided to also have a clinic in Amsterdam. So there was more, because Amsterdam is really the cultural most important city in the Netherlands. So musicians and dancers, gradually the word spread and they started to come in. And at the end, I had five days a week, purely dance and music medicine in the West End Hospital in The Hague. So in the early days, it was just a normal hospital, orthopedic hospital room, which I shared with my colleague orthopedic surgeons. And so the part of the day that was my office hour, I used this room, and we had a big curtain to hide the mirror and the bar, because my colleagues didn't want to see themselves all the time. And being a performing artist myself and being so close to dancers, I love mirrors, and a mirror makes your room look twice as big. So, but then we decided it was not possible to keep it together with general orthopedics anymore. And then I found on the ninth floor of my hospital a very big room, which was used to clean the hospital beds and to store spare beds for in the orthopedic wards. And I thought, well, if we can remove the beds to a simpler room and make an office from the cleaning area, then I may have my own center, my own location. Oh, it's the 10 o'clock. Sorry, bear with me. It's going to sound 10 times. So then I decided to ask the staff of the managers of the hospital if I could use this hospital bed cleaning area to establish a medical center for dancers and musicians. And then they said, well, we'll put them away there on the ninth floor. And they didn't realize the potential of this space. And it was really tremendous. It had 5 meters or more of windows overlooking the dunes of the North Sea to the west. So at the sunset in this room, and it was a very big room, I think 6 by 7 meters wide. So there was space for the piano, there was space for a ballet bar at the wall, there was a large mirror. I was able to buy a piece of dance flooring from Harlequin Dance Floors. And they actually felt a bit embarrassed that they had me pay for it. But at that time there was nothing, so they didn't realize the potential of the place yet. So there was a piece of official sprung dance floor, Harlequin dance floor, covered with the vinyl, which is used in professional dance studios to give the dancers the right feel of the floor, the bar, the mirror. Of course, there was also an examination table, and there was plenty of space to have them perform arabesque attitudes, little jumps, and dance on point. And so it was a very, very appropriate space for the Medical Center for Dancers and Musicians. And then I decided to have an official opening. And that was interesting. Then the royalty was interested to come over. And the sister of our queen at the time, Queen Beatrix, she has a sister called Princess Margaret, but then the Dutch version, Margriet. And I invited her to come and do the official opening. And she came. She came. And that gave me a window of opportunity to get everything I wanted. I want new flooring in the hall. I want the elevators being cleaned. And because, you know, the royalty is coming in. And since the opening of the hospital, this was only the second time that royalty entered the hospital. And so there was a very special moment. And we had the Royal Military Band performing, and we had the International Dance Theater performing, and several of the Dutch dance companies and professional musicians came to perform at this official opening. So we had a big symposium. And that was, of course, this was so special that it did interviews in the media, television, radio. I was on CNN even. So it was really amazing how much interest of the media this got, from journals, from television, from radio. Well, and of course, then everything went by itself, because there's no better advertisement than this kind of press coverage. And ever since, I've had my clinics filled up with musicians and dancers. And then, interestingly, and I'm sure you're aware of that, in dancers and musicians alike, there are very few operations needed. And I think in 95 or more percent, just a good explanation, good coaching, good advice, and explaining the functional anatomy of the reason for the injury, which quite often is compensating of limited turnout and all its sequelae. And so there was ample time to talk with the dancers and explain them the cause of their injury. But then the orthopedic fees, they're not meant to pay for talking, they're meant to pay for cutting. And so I was really on the poor side of orthopedics all that time, until I was able to establish a special fee with the Dutch insurance companies, which covered consultation and treatment of dancers and musicians. And so that was, at that time, I don't think I've earned as much as orthopedic surgeons do, maybe 10% of their income, but it's still quite enough to make a decent living as a medical specialist. But it made my life so beautiful and so rewarding. And I still have this wonderful contact with dancers and musicians. And looking back after my retirement, I'm 70 now, as I said, I retired 4 years ago. And I don't miss the operations. I don't miss doing my clinics. But I do miss the social cultural contact with the lovely human beings, dancers and musicians alike. And so that's why I continued my work, but more explaining things, explaining the causes of the injuries, but not doing the diagnostics, not doing the surgical side of orthopedics anymore. So it's more medical coaching, what I do now, and which is very, very rewarding. And the rewarding side of it is that I have the wonderful contacts with these very special, extraordinary human beings, the performing artists. So one thing is doing medical coaching, and the other part of my work, what I do now, is doing a lot of teaching, which can be for professional associations like the Dutch and Flemish Anatomy Association, but also for medical students. Interns. Mm-hmm. So those are medical students who are just before their graduation, and also for dance companies themselves, to help them to finding out why are dancers getting injured, what can we do, how can we better organize the field of dance medicine in our company. And so that's making dance medicine also more visible in the dance world. And so I try to use my experience of the past 30 years, 40 years actually, to stimulate dance medicine to grow and foster dance medicine and performing arts medicine in general.
Thank you. going back, I there are a couple things about your opening which I need to hear more about. How did you get in contact with the princess?
I phoned her secretary and asked her, what should I do? And she said, just write her a letter. And then I told her, please write with pencil in her diary. Date. And that's really the secret. And then I got the answer, well, she is available. So if she's interested, she might come. And then I wrote an official letter, handwritten, of course.
Sure.
And then I got the answer. And they, well, of course, I jumped in the air. Yes, she comes. And so, but it's, you know, they're very approachable. It's it's a matter of checking what is the contact telephone number at that time. I'm not sure if I had email already. I don't know. It was an official letter I wrote her. Mm-hmm. And you know, just step up and ask them. That's all that's there to it. And be honest and don't use them for profit or anything.
Sure.
But make an honest proposal, tell them what it's about, and also check which member of the royal family is most interested in the field you're working in. And Margriet is also the what's the word of in English? I don't know. In Dutch we would literally translate it as the protecting woman. But there's of course an English expression for it. But she's like an honorary member type of person of several dance academy, dance companies.
Understood.
So she's actively involved in dance, and that of course is the reason why I asked her and not the queen.
Sure.
Because she was more involved in dance than her sister.
Mm-hmm. And then the other thing that I was interested in too, you'd mentioned, you know, only initially being reimbursed for the actual surgeries. What was your interaction like with Dutch insurance to get reimbursed for exam and eval?
It took me about 10 years. Mm. Piling up yeah. papers and finding the right way. And then I had the support of the Dutch Orthopedic Association. I had the support of my hospital. I had the support of the medical advisors of insurance companies. Mm-hmm. And those three together helped me to start getting things in motion. But the main reason that I was successful is that usually the reaction would be, well, you know, orthopedic surgeons, they earn a lot because you can compensate with profitable operations. I said, no, I'm just dealing with dance and musicians. So there's no compensation whatsoever from a normal general orthopedic practice. And I think that was the main reason that I was successful in getting this special fee from the couple. Would you use that word? The dome, the mother organization of insurance companies. So then if they are with you, all the other insurance companies have to follow, because there was a state organized the black book of Dutch fees for medical specialists.
Mm-hmm.
And I think looking back, this is my greatest achievement in my career, that I was able to do that, which really established performing arts medicine in the Netherlands, also from the financial insurance company perspective.
Sure.
And that's due to the fact that I limited myself to only taking care of dancers and musicians.
Mm. And when you say you had the support of these various institutions to help you get to the space where you could be reimbursed, was that those institutions writing you letters that then you could kind of build a portfolio with to send to make your argument?
No. I was, when I started the Medical Center for Dancers and Musicians, it was half a day a week. Mm. So I had some time available to do other things. And I was phoning around to insurance companies, asking them, would you reimburse an orthopedic surgeon working in a private clinic? At that time, we didn't have any private clinics yet. And then one insurance company, a health insurance company, phoned me and they said, yes, we would reimburse that. But by the way, do you have time available? Would you like to be our medical advisor? We would love to have an orthopedic surgeon as medical advisor. So I started to work as a medical advisor on the side, and that made me survive financially. And then gradually I faded out the medical advisory work. But due to this medical advisory work, I knew all the medical advisors of insurance companies. So I had my foot in the door in all insurance companies. And the second reason is that I'm a trumpeter, and I always carry a trumpet with me. And you've seen my set of trumpets standing in my study. Mm-hmm. And all in the car, there's a trumpet. I always have a trumpet with me when I give a presentation or when I'm teaching. And somehow people notice you when you blow your trumpet.
Uh-huh. Yes.
So the trumpet has been a great gimmick to get yourself known by others. And so if I would call someone and say, oh, you're the trumpeter, yes. And usually it makes them smile when you play the trumpet, if you're not blowing right into their ear, that is. So I was and still am really well known, but that's not only because of my performing arts medical specialty, but also because I'm the only orthopedic surgeon who's always playing trumpet signals whenever attention is needed. And so the trumpet was very helpful in building up a network of relevant contacts.
Absolutely.
So it's a coincidence of several things together.
Sure. Yeah, no, that is brilliant. And I will say, for anyone who is listening to this who hasn't been to an iAdams conference with you, that's how I remember you, besides the bow tie, is playing trumpet.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Talking about the bow tie, mm-hmm. This bow tie I bought on Broadway, mm-hmm. together with Bill Hamilton the last time I visited him before he passed away.
Oh, wow.
So it's very precious to me, and I decided to wear it for this interview. And the small bow tie, which is right here.
On his lapel.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Okay, go. Yeah. This is... it's a royal medal, which was given to me for my work in the field of performing arts medicine, promoting dance medicine, promoting musicians medicine, both in the Netherlands and internationally. So it's officer of the Dutch Empire, the equivalent of the office of the British Empire, but then for the Netherlands.
Wow.
So it's due to Bill Hamilton, due to iAdams, due to the Medical Center for Dancers and Musicians, mm-hmm. and due to all the contacts and activities in this field, that this was rewarded with this officer of the Dutch. We don't have an empire because we are royalty. I don't know. But it's in the king, royal, the Dutch kingdom.
Right.
That's the word.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So I'm very, it was a big surprise to get this, but it's also a proof of the appreciation of what I've been doing in the field of performing arts medicine.
Absolutely.
Nationally and internationally.
Absolutely. Regarding your clinic at the Hague.
Yes.
When after your grand opening with CNN and the princess, and when things started to pick up, did
yes.
you was it always just you in the clinic? Did you end up bringing other professionals into the space, or what did it look like over time?
Over time, I brought in a rheumatologist. Mm-hmm. I usually had a resident following me, like I followed Bill Hamilton, a psychologist, and two or three supporting secretarial ladies. And that's one also very good advice I could give anyone who was willing to start performing arts medicine or dance medicine: find a retiring dancer, because they know the field, they have the contacts, and they're passionate like I am myself. But also they're usually very bright, although they may not have the proper education for what they're doing. They catch up easily. And so dancers are great people to work with, both as patients, because they're so motivated to heal, but also after their career, to have them as a colleague taking care of the more organizational part of the Medical Center for Dancers and Musicians. So at some point in time, we had some six people working in the Medical Center for Dancers and Musicians. But it's sad to realize that so much of this work depends on the passion of a few people. And at the moment I left the Medical Center for Dancers and Musicians, I had three part-time female medical doctors, a sports physician, and two rehabilitation, physical medicine and rehabilitation physicians. And the hospital didn't see much perspective financially for this medical center for dancers and musicians. Mm-hmm. So first they fired the two PM&R mm-hmm. physicians. And then they said to the remaining sports physician, well, we think a center with only one medical specialist is not viable. Is that the word, or vital?
Viable.
Mm-hmm. Viable. So decided to remove the medical center for dancers and musicians from the West End Hospital. But I'm very happy that it went on in the sports medicine facility in the west of Holland with Dr. Lim, Lisbeth Lim, who's a sports physician and who also is the sports physician of the Dutch Gymnast Association. So she's a dancer herself. Mm-hmm. So it still continues, but I've learned in my career that if you fight for something which is unusual, you have to continue fighting every day of your career. And at the very moment you think it's well established and it will carry on by itself, you may get unpleasantly surprised.
Yeah.
So yes, it continues, but it's much smaller now. But I'm pleased to say that several of the residents who worked with me in the past established now their own performing arts medicine clinics within their more general orthopedic oriented work.
Wonderful. And then you know, when it was a rheumatologist and a psychologist in addition to residents and others, what did you regularly collaborate with them
on? All the time. We were all in this nice corner of the hospital, which was really also very good for the performing artists themselves coming in, because some of the dancers and of the musicians are really well known from television, from the performances, and this was kind of isolated in a nice floor, a corner of the hospital, so they could come in unrecognized, right. And so it was a very safe environment for the performing artist. And I've seen, of course, as every performing arts medicine specialist, I've seen famous the artists as well. And they always felt very comfortable not sitting in the big waiting room with all the other general orthopedic patients, but having their own little corner with their own special Dr. B.
Sure. And I don't know, speaking, I think, from experience, I feel like having a psychologist regularly collaborate with you is an anomaly and also wonderful.
Yeah. Well, it was a neuropsychologist. Mm. He was doing research at the time, but the psychology department of our hospital, they said, Boni, you have the smallest clinic in our hospital, but you're one of the major referrers. We get so many referrals from you. And because especially in dance medicine and musicians medicine, the mind plays such a major role that they always thought, you know, it may not be psychology, but it helps you. I mean, the cause may not be psychological, but I'm sure it's going to help you to analyze it, to exclude psychological factors, and also to teach you how to deal better with your injury. So in part, it's the type of coaching I'm doing now, which I then refer to the psychologist. Mm-hmm. And so I've found it very, very rewarding to have a neuropsychologist. This was Gert-Jan de Haas, working right next door to me. And so we exchanged many ideas, and I learned a lot from him. Mm-hmm. And one of the most important things I learned from Gert-Jan de Haas, the neuropsychologist, is the phenomenon, and I'm sure you know it, the phenomenon of mental practice.
Yes.
You're familiar with that. I think everybody's familiar with it. And it really means, for the people who don't know it, that you imagine what you want to perform, that you imagine in your mind, that you visualize, as a word which is closely related to mental practice. Mm-hmm. You visualize what you're going to do, what you want to perform, and it really helps your performance. And you can actually learn. I really tested this with a piano player who had broken her wrist. Mm-hmm. I asked mm-hmm. her, now take a piece that you always wanted to learn, but you've never played before, and start mentally practicing this piece. And we have a symposium in 2 months, and then I want you to play this piece and tell us your experience. And she did it. And so after 6 weeks, when the plaster came off, she started to practice her hands again. And then, first of all, her rehabilitation went so much faster, because she had been training in her head all the time. And then the second surprise, she was able to play this piece by heart with only a very limited time at the piano itself. Wow. So that was for me a confirmation and a real, maybe not scientific, and is one series, but for me, this was the proof that mental practice and visualization are extremely, extremely powerful, and also very helpful in rehabilitation of any injured dancer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I remember you saying towards the beginning of this conversation that you started a clinic once a week with NDT, Netherlands mm-hmm. Dance Theater. Did you do any work like going into, do clinics like at the studio as well, or did folks typically come to you?
No, this was in NDT. There's a physiotherapy room, and in the physiotherapy room on the Thursday morning, it was reserved for me, and the dancers would write up their names if they wanted to see me. So there was a room already in the theater, and I'm sure most dance companies have a physiotherapy room, and so that's all equipped. There's the studios with the bar and the mirror, they're just right next door. There's examination table, and for the X-rays and everything. At the time, we didn't make so many MRIs, sure, but ultrasound and X-ray was readily available in the hospital, and that's also the reason that I established contact with the Hague Teaching Hospital, the West End Hospital. And that the step towards establishing this medical center for dancers and musicians in the hospital itself was a small step. Of course, I found it a little sad to leave the theater and the dance company premises itself, but it was so rewarding for the clinic and the performing arts medicine the world in the Netherlands that I'm very pleased that I made this step, looking back. Yeah.
Tangentially related, are there a couple patients or patient interactions or even cases that stick out in your mind as being formative for you?
My first piriformis syndrome, I'd never heard of it, but really not the medical side. We have made one article which was published decades ago about malignancies mm-hmm. in dance medicine. They do take place, and you always have to be very alert if there are signals of something not following the normal path. And so my rule of thumb is always make a good diagnosis first, and then treat whatever you find. And I know that that some of my colleagues, and also in the physiotherapy world, they start treating, and if it's therapy resistant, then it is time to get a proper diagnosis. But I would have it the other way around. First a diagnosis. And so I like it very much to be in close contact and communication with the physiotherapist and save the dancer from being treated for a prolonged time and without a good diagnosis, and at the end finding out that you have lost so much of the precious dance time, because a dancer's career is already very short. And I think the simple and most profitable solution for both the dancer and the physio and the orthopedic surgeon is to really work together and be together in the same room, which I found very rewarding in those early days in the dance company. And quite often also in the orthopedic clinic, the physio would come with the dancer. So that would give me the opportunity to discuss with the physio what he or she has done, what they have found, and what my perspective is, and what might be the best approach for treating this dancer. And maybe this is the right time to give my 4-step approach to therapy.
Go for it.
Well, step one is have a good diagnosis, give advice, explain what's going on, and tell them to visualize and do mental practice. That's step one. Step two is conservative treatment, non-invasive. Well, this, of course, is a major step.
Right.
It includes physiotherapy. It includes chiropraxy. It includes supplement inlays, foot inlays. It includes psychiatry, psychology, manipulations. Well, name it, everything which is not going into the body with anything. Then the step three is conservative treatment, invasive. So that's injections. You can have a therapeutic injection. You can have a diagnostic injection. Everything which is where needles are involved. And step four is surgery. And I always would think, and always in my mind, I go through the steps. Do I have the right diagnosis? Did I explain it well? And always give them 6 weeks between each step. And of course, sometimes it's clear when there's a fracture, you have to operate it straight away. So you skip step two and three, but you do stick to step one and give proper explanation what to expect. And please start before your surgery to visualize that you're dancing normally, because it will help you to keep your identity as a dancer. And that's really what I learned from Gert-Jan de Haas, our neuropsychologist, that mental practice is of major importance for every injured dancer. So if this is something that the listeners can take with them, take home with them, a take home message, do emphasize mental practice and visualization in any injured dancer.
When did you develop that early on, or was this something that morphed over time?
This worked over time. And at some point in time, I realized that I was going through these steps in my mind. I said, why not write them up? And this was really something I have to be thankful to Gert-Jan de Haas, the neuropsychologist, because he brought up the subject of mental practice. And so I include that in my first step. It's really very effective and extremely important, especially for dancers. And I remember a funny story of sports, a skater, a Dutch skater. We just won the European championships in the speed skating, by the way. And they saw one of the skaters, he was sitting on the boarding, and he was moving his head back and forth. And he suddenly made a strange movement. And somebody asked him, what were you doing? Oh, he said, I was going through my race and I was mentally practicing my race. But, you know, I hit one of these little soapy pieces on the side and I always almost fell over. So I made in my mind a wrong step skating. So that's how powerful mental practice is, that you can even make mistakes doing it.
Sure.
So that those are little lessons to be learned if you're open to it. And I think that having an open mind and not narrowing down to just the ankle, but see the whole person.
Right.
That's or just any part of the body, but see the whole person. And then when you have the diagnosis, then you can zoom in, of course.
Right. So what I wanted to talk about now is we've talked about the start of your clinic up to when it got busy and some of the collaborations that you've had and all that. And I just, not knowing personally all the strings of your life, I don't want to miss something between when your clinic got really successful and busy to when you retired. So let's talk about some of the threads that we've missed in between.
Well, one of the threads which we've touched upon is the mental practice, which has been a great lesson for me to learn that from the neuropsychologist Gert-Jan de Haas. And also in the context with IADAMS, going to all the meetings, I've been very actively going to the meetings, presenting myself. And one of the best parts of my work in the Medical Center for Dancers and Musicians was to have this practical sessions during the IADAMS meetings, the workshop type sessions, where you can hands-on show the participants of the conference how I would examine a dancer and tell them about the injuries that and the relation with limited turnout, with compensation, the mechanisms of compensation. So the contact with other colleagues, physiotherapists, orthopedic surgeons, old sports physicians, but also with the dancers and dance teachers themselves. And I think the interhuman contact is what I liked most in all my work. And I'm not sure if it's been recorded, but the cases that really stand out are the malignancies. And always very alert in any patient coming in the clinic, if there's something unusual, it's malignancy until proven otherwise. And unfortunately, sometimes it is malignancy. And one patient I vividly remember, and she became a very dear friend because she survived, was a dancer that came in with a rib fracture. And she was in a young dancer with a young partner, and he had lifted her. And so I thought it was just his thumb. He was not holding her in the right way, and being very cautious not to drop her. He may have actually broken her rib by squeezing it. And this is an injury I know myself, because one day my wife was leaning over to pick up the phone, and with her elbow, she leaned on my chest and she really sank into my chest. And I was so surprised how easily a rib can fracture. If you have very localized pressure, point pressure on one spot in the rib, and it's not supported by the whole cage of the other ribs, you'll break it. So I thought it was the thumb of her partner. And then so it healed, and I made a kind of harness of her in the plaster room so she could perform. And she was performing the Arabian dance in the Nutcracker. So she had to have a naked belly. So we made some nice pink thing that would not be too apparent. But then 6 weeks later, she came back with a second rib fracture. And she was looking a little bit jaundiced. And then I started to worry. So I had to analyze, and nothing came out. And again, 6 weeks, so this healed. And again, 6 weeks later, she came in with a third fracture. And then she was really jaundiced. And she turned out to have leukemia. Mm-hmm. And so she went into isolation, had the bone marrow transplantation. And I told her, do mental practice. And she was isolated for I don't know how many weeks, six weeks or 3 months. And we all the time we kept in touch together. And I'm not going to tell her name, but if she listens and she knows it's her I'm talking about. And she recovered. She recovered. And she's a Pilates teacher now. And she's been dancing again. And actually, I took her with me to another meeting where Princess Margriet was present. And, and so I showed her my little trumpet, and please can you hold it for me. So that was very interesting to see the princess again, and well, you know, once you've met her, and when once she's met you, she really remembers you, and of course I remember her. So it was very nice to meet her again. But it was even much nicer to have this young dancer who recovered from leukemia being my, as I call it, my muse, my demonstration subject, who was showing dance positions, ballet positions. And she danced a very, very moving dance solo at the end. And as recent as 2 days ago, I was having another presentation for the Dutch Anatomy and Dutch and Flemish Anatomy Association. And then another dancer came with me. And so I have, over the years, I've had many demonstration dancers coming with me to my presentations. And you know, you don't have to say much as an orthopedic surgeon if you have a dancer with you, because she or he will attract all the attention, and your presentation is going to be successful, whatever you say, because it's so great to have a dancer in a medical presentation. So this is one of the people that I immediately remember. But the take home message is beware of malignancies, because it's not always think of horses, not of zebras, is one expression. So it's usually it's a normal 12 in a dozen, 11 in a dozen injury, but have a very, very, very good thorough diagnosis. And if there's any suspicion that you're not on the right track, rule out malignancy by a good story, by a good physical examination, and if needed, X-rays, sonography, blood samples, MRI, whatever is needed. Don't do all these things until you have a diagnosis. What is the word? The hypothesis, what the cause may be. And so then try to use your additional examination, like scans and so on, as a confirmation or an exclusion thing. But don't use it to get your diagnosis. Your diagnosis should be established after proper history taking and a good physical examination. And that's where cooperation between orthopedic surgeons, sports physicians on the one hand, and physiotherapists, if we really cooperate properly together, it's for the benefit of our dancer patients.
Absolutely.
Is that an answer to your question?
Yeah, absolutely. It sure is. So I don't think I've said it yet, but happy 70th birthday. I know it was a couple months ago.
Thank you.
Yes, of course. Let's talk a little bit. You've mentioned it a couple times about some of the medical coaching that you're doing now. How did that evolve after you retired?
Well, I decided to step down and leave my successors completely on themselves, to not to be in their way, to give them a chance to establish themselves and as dance medical and performing arts medical specialists. But they themselves and the dancer and musician patients regularly call me to ask my advice. And so from the one hand, I feel that there's a need for this medical coaching. And on the other hand, I miss the social cultural contacts. So I decided, well, why not establish officially and properly a medical coaching practice? So I made a website. It's a very simple name, www.bonierietveld.com. And it is going to be translated in English, but it is just on air since 1 week. So if you go there, you'll see some pictures of me. You can also take them down from the from the screen. And the funny thing is, I had so many interviews and also of the big national newspapers. And then there comes an official professional photographer taking your portrait pictures. So I have some great pictures. So I asked this photographer, is it okay that I use your picture on my website? And they all said, yes, it's been paid for by the journal. And I always offered them, of course, to mention their name. So you'll see some beautiful pictures on this website, which are taken by the real top of the bill photographers of the Netherlands. So I'm very pleased with this website. And so it's partially something I've been doing the past years, but not on a regular basis, which I made official now by this website and a press release. And I'm now in the process of approaching directors of dance companies, reporters who have interviewed me in the past, to tell them about this official takeoff of this medical coaching practice. And I think it's something which is useful for every orthopedic surgeon who is stepping down a little bit. And if you really have the passion for dance medicine, it's a great way to stay involved.
Absolutely. And kind of tangentially related, and speaking of which, I've been asking everyone this question, which is, and you alluded to the answer before, but where would you like to see the next generation of dance medicine and science go?
The only important thing in my perspective is be passionate about what you're doing. Of course, there's much to be learned. So you should be a top specialist in your field, whatever you're doing, and learn from all the people around you. Be humble and don't think that you're the best in the field, because somebody who's not as good as you are may have some different perspective, which may be very, very useful. Be open to all colleagues around you, even if they're not from the same fields. Like what my best lesson I learned is from this neuropsychologist. And so have an open mind and always be aware of a good diagnosis and thus the progression of the therapy or of the injury. Does it fit the diagnosis I made? And the diagnosis is not just a functional diagnosis, but it really should be a medical diagnosis. And anyway, that's my perspective.
Thanks.
So it's not something very concrete, like better operation or more arthroscopic operations. Actually, I found that I forgot to tell something very special. when I was in my training, and I was invited to write a thesis about spastic children and do some study in that field. I said, well, I don't want to be the specialist on spastic children. I want to be a performing arts medicine specialist. So I decided to postpone my PhD thesis. And I finally wrote my thesis when I was 65 years old. And so I defended my PhD thesis in 2017, the 28th of November. And I'll show you my booklet.
Wow. Wow. That is not just a booklet. That is a book. That is a...
It really is.
Wow. Wow.
It's a big book. And I was very happy to be able to pass my PhD. And it's so much more beneficial to build something up and write up all your experience. And actually, I'll send you the link for the PhD thesis so you can have a look at it. And also at the statements at the end, which are always nice to have. In Dutch, you're forced to have five statements which are scientifically based, five general statements, and five funny statements. And of course, the funny ones are the best, like the scientific proof of the usefulness of a parachute and things like that. But in my thesis, it was all about relevé in dancers. And that was the reason I thought of my thesis, because I found that open surgery is better for dancers with posterior ankle impingements than arthroscopic surgery. And the reason for that is that I make a minute incision, only 1 inch. And I just push the tissue away and I go into the ostrigonum or the flexor hallucis longus, whatever is the problem. If you do it arthroscopically, to get a good view, you have to shave away the tissue, which makes immense scar tissue. So the postoperative rehabilitation in arthroscopic surgery for posterior ankle syndrome in my hands was much slower than with open surgery. Mm-hmm. So it's not always a heaven to have arthroscopic surgery whenever possible. You really have to think what is the best approach in this typical diagnosis. And so that was one of the articles in my thesis. And I did a systematic review of posterior ankle impingement. So it was all about relevé, but the first chapter is really the most interesting part because it describes the history of performing arts medicine in the Netherlands and also a little bit internationally. So have a look at chapter one if you like, and if you are a reader, and I'll send you the link. And the next time we really meet physically, do remind me to take a booklet for you so I can give that to you.
I sure will. If you're coming to Ohio, I'll see you in Ohio.
Oh yes, I hope to be there. Well, one thing I would like to mention is that it's so important to realize that IADAMS has a strong foundation also in Europe and the rest of the world. And and I'm very pleased that you invited me for this interview. And I'm sure you're going to interview some other past presidents. And we have had quite a few European past presidents. And as you've noticed, we have some charter members from Europe as well, from the earliest days on, from 1991, who are actively in performing arts medicine in Europe. So it's definitely an international association for dance medicine and science. And it's a global association. And there's some parts of the world we may have to give a little bit more attention, as I said before, but the time should be ready for that.
I agree. Well, I sincerely appreciate your time and everything that you've contributed thus far, because it's not over yet, to the field of medicine and science. So thank you, Dr. Rietveld. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. And thank you for the interview. And I look forward to the result. And I wish you all the success to edit it, because I know that can be a lot of work. And I hope you didn't miss too much when the system came to a standstill. And if you need, then just call me again and we may set up another Zoom meeting.
I sure will. I appreciate it.
Okay. Very nice talking. Bye-bye.
Bye. Have a great night.
Same to you. Bye-bye.
Bye.